Hi, all of you wonderful scuba divers out there. Welcome to the Scuba Diving Magazine podcast, where I break down the latest scuba diving news and things that have piqued my interest over the previous week. This week, a diver searching for fossils in a river ended a dive being pinned to the floor by an alligator. The captain of the Conception boat fire has lost his bid to secure a retrial, and several underwater records have been broken from freediving to dominoes. So the first news story is a bonkers news story. A diver from the United States has survived being pinned to a riverbed at a depth of about 15 meters by an irate alligator just at the moment his air cylinder was running out. So this is Will Georgitis, who was very fortunate to get away with nothing worse than a broken and badly mauled arm following the rare encounter in Cooper River near Goose Creek in South Carolina on the 15th of April. Georgitis had been indulging in the popular pursuit of diving in search of megalodon teeth. You find lots of these megalodon teeth around the riverbed, and had found a number of fossilized teeth on that day. And according to a report in Charleston's Post and Courier, he saw when he surfaced, he sort of looked around and saw the alligator heading straight towards him about 20 feet away, and it got to within about a foot of him. He saw it turn its head, open its jaws, so he instinctively raised his right arm in a bid to stop it from biting his like neck and face. It, of course, clamped onto his arm between the wrist and the elbow on his forearm, and in his words, I think he said that it thrashed him around like a rag doll. So he wrapped his legs around its body, worrying that it was going to do like a death roll and just rip the arm off. But the 6'2" diver was unable to hook his ankles together either side of it because of the size of his alligator, but he did manage to like wrap his legs around it. Using his left arm, he had a screwdriver that he was using as a tool to like dig around and find these fossils. So of course he started stabbing at the crocodile, the alligator, to try and get it to let go of him, basically. And at that point, the alligator just dove down to the bottom, at least 15 meters down, and then like laid on top of him, and he felt it push him down into the bottom, into the substrate, which is a pretty standard behavior of crocodiles. They drown their victims, and then sometimes I think they like wedge them underneath things, which is just horrifying. But of course, still had a bit of air in his cylinder, but it was towards the end of the dive, so didn't have a great deal. He kept going with the screwdriver, trying to like convince it to release him. But at that point, his air cylinder ran empty, so he had no time left, and he decided, well, it's my arm or my life, and he chose his life. So he like planted his feet against the underside of the alligator, pushed as hard as he could, and luckily the alligator lost grip of his arm, didn't take the arm, just badly mauled it and broke it. He got back to the surface, got back to a boat and a friend, of course, called emergency services and helped him out. His ulna, which is one of the bones in the forearm, was broken, and the radius was dislocated. The other arm the other bone in your forearm. Surgeons inserted a metal plate using 9 screws and stapled together the wounds caused by the alligator's teeth. Further surgery was not ruled out, and the diver was told to allow 6 months for recovery. Georgitis reported his near-death experience to the State Department of Natural Resources to ensure that other divers were forewarned. He had dived in the same bend of the river regularly for about 6 months without incident, although seeing alligators in the area was not unusual. There are estimated to be some 100,000 American alligators, a federally protected species in South Carolina, but such in-water incidents have been relatively rare. So if you are diving in any areas where there are alligators, I don't know why it needs to be said, but do be careful. Stuff like this does clearly happen, and yeah, it just goes to show that you you should really surface with plenty of gas left in your cylinder, just in case something like this happens. Gives you a bit of extra time. And yeah, as soon as you reach the surface, don't spit out your regulator, just in case, or take your mask off. It's always handy to be able to see what's going on, as well as breathe. Jerry Boylan, the captain of the California dive boat, the Conception, on which 34 people died when a fire broke out on board in 2019, has lost his bid to secure a retrial. Boylan, who is 70, was convicted of the federal offence of seaman's manslaughter through gross negligence in a jury trial last year, but sentencing was delayed pending the appeal. This maritime version of manslaughter is a pre-Civil War statute created to hold captains and crew accountable for disasters at sea. U.S. District Judge George Wu denied Boylan's appeal for the case to be heard again on the 22nd of April, leaving the captain facing the possibility of a maximum 10-year prison sentence. Boylan was judged responsible for the worst disaster in California maritime history after it was found that he had failed to set up a roving patrol on the liverboard overnight as required, or to train his crew in procedures to follow in an emergency. 33 guests and a single crew member who had been sleeping in a bunk room below were trapped as the fire spread. Boylan had been the first to abandon ship from the blazing boat, with the prosecution commenting that he had shown unpardonable cowardice. According to a report by Courthouse News Service, Boylan's requests for a retrial was made on the grounds that the judge had allegedly given jurors erroneous instructions about another lesser offence of negligence in operating a vessel, and that former crew member Brian Pridden, who had given evidence for the prosecution, was said to have lied in describing Boylan's attitude towards onboard safety as lax. Judge Wu dismissed both arguments. He conceded that it might have been better not to have included the lesser offence instruction, which would have given the jury the option to convict Boylan of a misdemeanor, but said the instruction was, quote, beside the point and would have made no difference to the request for a retrial. The judge also rejected the argument that Pridden had lied in claiming to have resigned from his position with fleet operator Truth Aquatics because of a perceived significant risk to guest safety. Boylan had claimed that Pridden had quit because his sole concern was with Truth Aquatics' waste disposal methods. However, according to the judge, the crew member had indicated that he had left the company as a result of a number of concerns, including the lack of a night watch. Boylan is now due to be sentenced on the 2nd of May, so we'll see what happens then. There's also a really interesting breakdown article by Steve Weinman on DiverNet covering Nigel Craig's incident. So Nigel, the article's too long. It is definitely worth a read. Nigel was a dive instructor. And in 2016, I think it was, it's a good while ago, one of his students tragically died after a training dive. And the article basically covers everything from the lead up to the dive itself, and the following court case. And it's a fascinating read. And honestly, one of the reasons why I stopped teaching, just because even though you can do everything that you've been taught to do properly, you still get put through the ringer. And when it comes to a jury deciding whether you are responsible or not, there's a lot of like scuba diving specifics that come into a case like this, and you're not going to get 12 expert scuba divers to make that kind of decision for you. They even said in the prosecution they did have a diver as like an expert. Are they called an expert witness? As an expert in the area, but they were an expert in like military diving, which is completely different procedures and everything to recreational scuba diving and technical diving. Anyway, it is definitely worth it. There's going to be a link down in the description below. It is too long for me to go through on the podcast. But yeah, it is really fascinating to read through everything. It's very, very well written. He interviewed Nigel, Steve Winan, interviewed Nigel and sort of went through everything. And it's had a really serious effect on him. I don't think he's been diving ever since. Just in case. I mean, there was another case. I can't remember whether it was a training dive, but a court, I believe, briefly found a buddy, like legally responsible for the death of their buddy. I don't think they were teaching, but they were an instructor, and it was a matter of, well, yeah, you should have or could have done something. And it was just kind of, it was an accident. But anyway, yeah, there's a link down in the description below. It's definitely worth reading. Onto some lighter news, a group of 138 scuba divers hit the tiles in the southern Caribbean island of Curacao, I never know how to pronounce it, on the 20th of April in a bid to set a new Guinness World Record for playing dominoes underwater, of all things, and succeeded in smashing the record that was set in the United Kingdom 11 years ago. So back in 2013, it had been enough for 60 scuba divers from the Del Mar Dive Club in Wingsden to play the a game of dominoes for about 10 minutes in a pool. The more ambitious Curacao divers hovered about 35 tables suspended from SMBs in the ocean in groups of two or four. And yeah, they played dominoes for I think it was 23 minutes. And yeah, the Guinness World Record official was on hand to verify the record on the spot. You can get a Guinness World Record for almost anything underwater nowadays. In the more challenging, world records, Italian freediver Alessia Zaccini broke her own CMAS free immersion world record by 3 meters on the 19th of April, with a dive down to 104 meters. The record was set on the second day of the Camotes Freediving Challenge off Cebu in the Philippines, a limited entry competition that started on the 17th of April and runs for a week. The discipline involves the finless freediver descending and ascending only by pulling on the rope. So you have a weighted rope that's, of course, anchored on the surface, and then you have a weight down at the bottom, and you just pull yourself down and then back up again. No fins, no weights, just you and the rope. Zaccini had completed a 104-meter dive early in the week following 3 weeks of training, but had been extremely frustrated to be disqualified on a technicality when a safety diver had touched her before she had fully surfaced. After initial anger at the decision, the 31-year-old said that she'd been happy simply to know that the dive could be done and that she only had to replicate it 2 days later, which she did. The record dive took her 3 minutes and 46 seconds, and the safety diver did not touch her. I presume it's just a rule to prevent, like, a diver from aiding the free diver. But yeah, that must be annoying. You're so close to the surface, and the safety diver, like, grabs you to support you a little bit too early, and your world record is like, no, that's null and void. Fine, I'll do it 2 days later. But she's done it. She has that world record now. And if you're into freediving, RAID has a new freediving course, the Static Apnea Program, which I never really understood. I mean, I understood it. It's static apnea is where you basically try to hold your breath as long as possible. You're going for time over anything, and you basically just lay face down on the surface for as long as you can. So every picture, every video looks like a drowning incident, and you always have someone else there to make sure that you're okay. But struth, it's no, I never really understood this discipline. But if you're into it, If it's your thing, then Rage has a new program going for that specific discipline. The current ADA men's and women's static apnea records were set by Stefan Mifsud at 11 minutes and 35 seconds, and Natalia Molchanova at 9 minutes 2 seconds, in both cases some years ago. I don't really get this. I get like breath hold and training your body and everything. But laying face down on the surface of a swimming pool isn't really my thing. As far as equipment news, Scuba Pro has a free Octo offer. This is limited. I don't know where. It just says may not be available in all regions. But this is free Octopus offer with a purchase of specific Scuba Pro regulator systems. The offer is valid until the 31st of the 7th. July 2024. So if you're buying a... It's lots of different combinations. So if you're buying an S600 or a G260, with either the Mark 25, the Mark 17, they still have Mark 17 Evos, or the Mark 19 Evo, you can get a R105, which is their more basic Octo. For a fancier Octo, the S270, if you buy the A700, which is their shiny metal one, the D420, which is the one that looks kind of weird, but technically it's a really, really nice breathe, or the S620 Ti, which is like their hybrid of the 600, the G260, and the A700, I believe. They kind of took the best parts of each of those and like molded it into a like super regulator, and it is actually a super regulator. If you're getting any of those three with the Mark 19 or the Mark 25 Evos, you get a free S270 Octo. I imagine it's with participating Scuba Pro dealers, it is definitely worth. Scuba Pro has a dealer list, so on their website that you'll find out whether it's applicable in your area. It seems to be here in the UK. Otherwise, Shearwater has a new website, a fancier website, and it's much. Their old website was fine. There was nothing overly wrong with it. They just have a more modern design, as it were. Each of the product pages is a bit more kind of like Apple, where you get most of the information at the top, and then as you scroll down, you have different sections, and it's all like fancy. It looks a lot like an e-commerce website. So it'll be very easy for them just to flick a switch to buy direct, which a lot of the manufacturers are doing nowadays. I don't know if that's something that they're planning to do, but I've seen it before. You can clearly tell when a website is like geared up for just to be informational, and then you can clearly see, oh, okay, yeah, that's just a product webpage. They just don't have the buy now button populated. So don't know. Maybe that's something that we'll see in the future. But for now, it's just got a find an authorized dealer, which is nice. It's nicer for the dive centers because it means that you have to go to an authorized dealer instead of just cutting out the middleman. But hey. So on to some Ask Mark questions. The first one comes from Enter the Adventure 5313. And they say, why do dive computers, even tech computers such as the Perdix, have inaccurate surface intervals like 172 days? Can you also explain the relationship between a surface interval and the computer between dives? So inaccurate surface intervals, I presume you mean what's the point in saying you've been on the surface 172 days instead of just like clearing after 48 hours. I presume that's just like coding and kind of guilt tripping. If it's been 172 since your last dive, you look at it and you go, okay, I'll go scuba diving again. I presume there's an element of that, and kind of what's the point in writing extra code? I presume they stop at a certain point. I don't know when the computer stops counting days that you've been out of the water. Maybe it's just like interest. If there has been an incident and the authorities look at your dive computer and say, oh, okay, well, yeah, as you can see, the computer says, yeah, he's been on the surface, or he hasn't been on a dive in 100, or he hasn't taken this computer on a dive in 172 days. Maybe that's Maybe that's it. I know they reset every time you update the software. So if there's a product software update, it resets all of your tissues. So you do have to be careful with that if you're doing that between dives. But can you also explain the relationship between a surface interval and the computer between dives? The relationship between a surface interval and the computer? I mean, the computer's always thinking, or the algorithm is always working out your off-gassing. So whenever you're on the surface, it's recording that time, and it knows that you've been on the surface for 172 days. It works out, depending on the algorithm, how many compartments have desaturated. I don't know. Is there more to that question? Is that what you're asking? I'm wondering if this is like auto-translated or something. Can you also explain the relationship between a surface interval and the computer between dives? I mean, the relationship is just the surface interval is the time that you're spending on the surface, and the computer is aware of it because the pressure sensor knows you're on the surface. Don't know. I'm going to leave that question. Energy ZLP says, "Hi Mark, I recently bought a new dry suit, the Scuba Force Explorer NST. I cut the cuffs to size and tested it in the water for the first time. Conclusion, it's leaking somewhere. Oh dear. The zipper was definitely closed. Good. It entered somewhere in the stomach crotch area. We couldn't find a hole. I would prefer just to send the suit back. I bought it from an official German dealer and have a 14-day right of return. Yep. However, the cuffs had to be cut to size for testing." Yeah, that's interesting. What does that look like in this case? Return within the deadline, but with shortened cuffs. Without shortening the cuffs, I wouldn't have been able to test the suit." Exactly. In Germany, there's a right of cancellation. Here's the original wording. "You are only liable for any loss of value of the goods that is due to handling of the goods that is not necessary to check their quality, properties, and functioning." Yeah, that's the perfect sentence. Do you have any advice? I mean, it's... Let me just run through all of these things. So a new dry suit, brand new dry suits. I mean, I'd be every single dry suit manufacturer that I'm aware of leak tests their dry suits after production before they ship them off because... Otherwise, what's the point in shipping out a dry suit? Chances are it's just going to come back as if it's got a leak. So these kind of leaks are typically done or typically caused by, it's usually the neck seal. If you're new to dry suits, you tend to look with your head and your neck when you should be looking with your shoulders. You kind of turn to look like Batman. The Michael Keaton Batman looked with his shoulders instead of the neck, because every time that you'd like turn your head and your neck, you're kind of pulling and twisting on that neck seal. So a lot of the time the water gets in. Locating exactly where a leak comes from is tricky in a dry suit, because even if there is a hole in a dry suit, water has a knack of traveling. So we used to find that a lot of people would come in with like old dry suits and say, "It's leaking. I'm getting wet in the crotch." The crotch is a pretty common area to get leaks in a dry suit. And the main reason is usually because like right in the crotch between your legs is a very high wear area. Your legs as you're fitting are constantly rubbing together, so yeah, you get a lot of wear and tear especially if there are any seams in that area. But this is a brand new dry suit, so the leaks, the seams should be fine. I say should be, there's always an asterisk. And if you've leak tested it, you kind of have to leak test the entire dry suit, because we've had it where they come in getting wet on the crotch, you leak test the entire dry suit and it's actually a leak on like the shoulder, but that's where the water is like entering the suit. It's still watertight on the inside of that seam, but the water can travel like inside the seam along the seam down the suit, and then it finally finds an exit point inside of the dry suit, and that's where it shows itself. That's where you're getting wet. So you kind of have to leak test the entire dry suit. You can't just leak test that particular area. There is an argument that, yeah, the product is like unfit for purpose if it's leaking, because you've like, I wouldn't say like damaged the dry suit, but because you have like customized the dry suit, I wouldn't worry too much about it. Dry suit manufacturers, they know that you have to customize or you have to adjust the size of cuffs and neck seals and these kind of things. They're aware of all of it. The one piece of advice that I would say is just be honest. Just talk to them or write them an email and just say, hi, just bought this dry suit. I've done this, that, and the other. I had to adjust the cuff seals because they were too tight. Taken on a dive and it's leaked here. How can you help? If you're honest and friendly, then they're more likely to go out of their way to help you out, because it benefits both of you. You're a happy customer, and you're less likely to just go nuts on social media. And it's cost the company is like maybe a couple cuff seals. Whereas if you kick off first, or you're really like condescending or whatever in the initial email or something, then they're just going to put their walls up, and they are going to stick to any like legal wording and stuff. There's dry suits. I'm always worried because they often come under a like customized item kind of exception to like rights of return. You have to be quite careful if there's any like customization, like if you chose one particular cuff seal against a different, then it becomes a custom item. Like if you put your name on something, then they don't have to take it back, and they usually have the right to repair, as far as I'm aware. It may be different in Germany. I'm just talking from like my experience selling dry suits, the manufacturer can just say, oh, okay, we'll repair it and send it back to you. You're not going to get a brand new one. So just be friendly, just be honest, and just say, hey, this is the scenario. How can you help me? And they should help you out. Most manufacturers are pretty good about these sorts of things. Victor FL4LJ says, I just got the Aqualung Helix Compact Pro. Aqualung recommends servicing every 2 years. I primarily dive nitrox, so should I service my gear more frequently? And if so, how much more frequently would you recommend? Also, you recommend changing the low pressure hose every 5 years. Would you recommend servicing more frequently with nitrox? And if so, how often? Well, the first thing is the Aqualung service schedule is 2 years, but that includes a like intermediate inspection. So you buy the regulator. You have to have that inspected by an Aqualung technician. They basically hook it up to a test bench, make sure it's still functioning properly, and then replace any parts that require replacing. Then the following year, on that second year, you get a full service where they replace a lot of the parts and put it back together and test it and everything. So your regulators are kind of going in every year anyway, but the inspection is a lot cheaper than the full on service. I primarily dive nitrox, so should I service my gear more frequently? I don't think so. I don't know why. I mean, if you're going over 40% nitrox, then yes, I probably would be servicing them once a year, or depending on, it all depends on how much you use them, basically, and the nitrox that you're using. If you're sub 40% oxygen, I wouldn't worry too much about it. Just get them looked at once a year, and that should be fine. Hoses, no, just the same. Recommend changing it every 5 years. Would you recommend servicing more frequently with nitrox? No. It's recreational, like sub 40%. You should be fine, but anything over that, you should really be diving a nitrox specific regulator that uses different greases anyway, and they, as far as I'm aware, should be serviced every year, or depending, it all depends on how much you use them. If you're using them more professionally, using them like weekly, then yeah, you should be servicing them like every 6 years, 6 years, 6 months. But that's a judgment call on your side of things. Pete Boyd, 4375, says, "Hi Mark, thanks for all the great videos. You're welcome. Do you know of any diver recall devices to alert divers to surface? I found some commercial expensive ones, but I was looking for a recreational cheaper one for my boat." Several. There's the cheapest is a spanner. We used to, but that has quite a limited range. If you bang a spanner on a metal like dive ladder that's in the water, you can hear that from a pretty good distance. Just tap it like three times, ding ding ding, wait a bit and then do it again. That's a pretty good recall and that's pretty cheap. We also had where you can rev the engine of the rib or the boat. If you rev it a couple of times in quick succession, that's a diver recall. They're going to be your cheap options. Then I know at some dive sites you get these like grenades, for lack of a better term. It's just a manufactured pipe bomb that you pull the pin out, you let the spoon go and you throw it into the water, wait 5 seconds and it just goes crack. And that's pretty obvious. They're single use, obviously. I don't know how much they are or what legal paperwork you have to go through to get hold of them, but they exist. Otherwise, yeah, you can get, I think I know what you're talking about with the commercial ones, which is basically a hydrophone. You get this like underwater microphone, no, not microphone, speaker, underwater speaker, lower that into the water, and then you have a box on the surface that you can either press a button and it does a tone, or some of them you can talk through like an underwater radio. They have a limited range, but it is pretty good. Otherwise, yeah, you're looking at like through water communications, where similar way, you lower a transmitter into the water. You have like a radio box on the surface that you can talk through, but then every diver needs a like earphone thing connected to their mask over their ear, and then they'll hear it. I haven't had the best experience with through water communications. It's like any other like radio walkie-talkie kind of system. There's lots of variables, and the signal can be quite patchy. But I've been on some dives and yeah, you can hear them perfectly. Yeah, it is not particularly cheap, but compared to some of the commercial diving systems, yeah, it's going to be pretty cheap. It depends on like range and like environment. So yeah, if you can like literally ding a wrench on the dive ladder and that works great, but it all depends on the individual divers. I've taught students, and I used to dive with a quacker, which is a little device that fits between the low pressure inflator hose and your inflator, has a button, and there's like a little metal disc inside of it. If you push the button, it rattles the disc and it makes a quacking noise. Sounds like a duck underwater. You push the button and people hopefully around you are aware of it. I've told students, I dive with a quacker. If you hear a quacking noise underwater, which is quite unusual, that's me trying to get your attention to just look around for me. And I've been 6-7 feet from a diver who was facing away from me. I just pressed it and nothing. So it all relies on the individual divers knowing and being in that mindset, even though what 10, 15 minutes ago during the dive briefing, I've told them, it still escapes them because they're underwater. They're seeing the underwater world. But yeah, it's actual like underwater speakers and that kind of systems. Yeah, they're going to be pretty pricey. And that's it for another week. Thank you so very much for listening, everybody. All of the links to everything that I've been talking about are going to be down in the description under this video. So yeah, check out scubapro.com. See if that free Octo offer is available in your area. Head over to our website, scubadivermag.com. Check out all the awesome things that we do over there. Check out our magazine. Consider a subscription, please. Subscribe here, depending on where you're listening, and whether it's on YouTube or the other like podcast type areas. Thank you for listening, everybody. And of course, safe diving.